Republican lawmaker Renee Unterman once led efforts to shut down the Medicaid expansion in Georgia. Those efforts were successful. Now the state senator has changed her mind. Georgia's stance on the Medicaid expansion has cost the state billions in federal dollars, thousands of jobs, and possibly caused several hospitals to shut down. It's also forced large hospitals like Grady Memorial to absorb the costs of helping the poor, uninsured, and mentally ill. A new book traces the history of urban hospitals and how public policies have failed them. It's called A Spirit of Charity, Restoring the Bond Between America and Its Public Hospitals. Author and journalist Mike King joins me now. Mike, welcome.
Thank you, Celeste, for having me here.
What is the difference between an urban hospital and a rural hospital? Is it just a concentration of population?
Yeah, mostly I would say that's the case. Interestingly, both of them have a large population of uninsured and Medicaid patients, particularly in the rural areas where there is no competing hospital. So they have to absorb a large percentage of their patient mix is either uninsured or with Medicaid. In an urban hospital, that number is just multiplied by many times over. The difference between an urban hospital and a rural hospital is urban hospitals have competing hospitals around them that take in a lot more of the insured patients and Medicare paid-for patients. So the risk in the urban hospital setting is much higher, I think, even than in rural hospitals.
Although here in Georgia, at least, I think most of the hospitals that I've actually had to shut down were rural hospitals.
That's correct. That's correct. I think there's been a number of them in just the last 4 years, something like 15 since the 2001.
Yeah, there's a concern that some people are quite a distance away from their closest hospital here in the state.
The rural hospital situation in this state is pretty complicated, and as it is around the country, clearly Medicaid expansion would help those hospitals to at least get a significant portion of the patients that they are treating now covered by an insurance plan of some kind. But it's much broader than just the Medicaid question for many rural hospitals. The areas that they serve are just simply not big enough to be able to support.
Or with enough patients, I guess. Yeah. Okay, so then let's bring that back to the urban environment. Does the Medicaid expansion make the difference for a hospital like Grady?
It does. When you stop and think about Grady's patient pay mix, and that's a term a lot of...
Patient
pay mix is a term that...
That just means the number of people who either I have insurance or don't,
it's
right?
It's who's in there, yes, the patients who are in there. And in most hospitals, the patient pay mix of uninsured and Medicaid patients is somewhere around 15%. At Grady, it's above 50%.
I want to repeat those. At most hospitals, the number of uninsured are people who are on Medicaid, 15.
Right.
At Grady, it's above half.
Correct.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's a big deal because if you don't find enough paying customers, in other words, those patients who are coming in with private insurance or Medicare to offset the cost of the patients who are coming in without insurance or without Medicaid or with Medicaid, then you're going to have a financial bind right off the bat. And that's where Grady is right now. It has always been that way. It's always been in that situation. And that's one of the reasons why it got in such trouble back in the 2007, 2008 when it was on the brink of insolvency.
Okay, so then let's go back to the founding of Grady. What was the purpose of the hospital? Because it did have fairly bipartisan support, and it was not a small task to create that hospital.
No, Grady was a hospital that was created in the 1880s when the small not-for-profit hospitals, the first hospital in Atlanta was St. Joseph's Hospital, founded by the Sisters of Mercy in 1880. And there were several other hospitals that grew up that were not nonprofit sort of charity organizations. But as the city grew, they could not keep pace with the number of patients that were coming in. So the city fathers, mostly on the behest of the business community, interestingly, because that's who saved the Grady Hospital in 2007, 2008, the business community was pushing Atlanta to do what other major urban areas around the country were doing, which was to create a public hospital that was chartered in a way that the city provided some support to be able to provide charity care for anybody who needed it, who came through the door. So that's how Grady was.
From the beginning, it was a charity hospital, which thus the title of your book is Spirit of Charity.
Yeah. If you look at the ordinance that created it, I looked at it at the Atlanta History Center. It was it's a fascinating thing because it says the city of Atlanta commits to supporting Grady Hospital, as it says. And then in the original notes on the ordinance, it says as a charitable trust. And then that was
removed
at one point. But it still committed the city to supporting the hospital and its operations. And then, of course, the city had it for years and years, and then it became a Fulton and DeKalb Hospital Authority Hospital back in the 40s.
Which means what? What's that? When that change went, when it we no longer under the auspices of the city of Atlanta, what changed? What did that change mean?
I think it changed mostly because under Georgia's constitution, counties are responsible for health issues, and the city was using it, was supporting it by itself. It was getting a lot of patients from both Fulton and DeKalb County anyway. The city was saying, well, they need to pay for some of this freight. So at the time, they were able to get the two counties to agree to establish a hospital authority. The other thing it allowed it to do was to issue bonds, which is no big deal.
Yeah, that's
is
no
a big
small
deal.
Thing, yeah. Yeah.
And at the time, they transfer the hospital from the city to the bi-county authority took place.
All right. If you're just joining us, my guest is journalist and author Mike King. His new book is called A Spirit of Charity, Restoring the Bond Between America and Its Public Hospitals. And we would love to hear from you. I wonder if you have questions about the Medicaid expansion in Georgia or about Grady itself. You can reach us. Tweet us now at OST Talk, and I promise you I will see the tweet. Mike, help me get my head around then about the effects of the turning down this Medicaid expansion. Do we have an idea of what the total amount is that Grady has lost because of that?
We don't have a total amount for Grady or individual hospitals because it's hard to actually pinpoint that. What we know from the law, from the 2010 Affordable Care Act law, is that Georgia was designated to get on the order of about $32 to $33 billion over a 10-year period. If you translate that, yeah, that's 1.5 times the state's budget right now. So if you translate that into a daily or a yearly amount, we're turning down about $9 million a day going back to the federal treasury because we have this ideological opposition to Obamacare simply on the basis that we just don't like anything associated with Obamacare.
And by that, you're referring to the legislature, although yep. It sounds as though opinion may be turning on that.
I think opinion will turn on that. It's, you know, we have made this ideological stand. I think as soon as President Obama's in the rearview mirror, and particularly if there's a Democrat in the White House after he leaves, the state will all of a sudden get smart and decide that there's a way to create a plan that looks like Medicaid expansion. We won't call it Medicaid expansion. We'll call it something else, and we'll begin to take that money. The problem is, in the meantime, in the first 3 years of Obamacare, the federal government provided 100% of the funding for Medicaid expansion, and now it will begin to ratchet down to 90%.
Yeah, it
so we will
off.
Have given up probably $3 to $5 billion over this stand.
But as you said, it only tapers off to 90%.
It does.
Which is still a huge amount.
The existing Medicaid program that has existed for a long time since the law was passed in 1965 is that the federal government provides about 65 or 66%. In order to encourage states to expand, the federal government, through Congress's act, decided to give them 100% in this particular case. And that's why those of us who were advocating for Medicaid expansion back after the law was passed, we're sort of stunned by the fact that the state was willing to give up 100% federal funding.
All right. Let's return then to what has sort of complicated funding for Grady. And one of the arguments that you make in your book is stereotypes, that our attitude toward public hospitals and charity care has changed dramatically. What do you mean?
Well, I think all of us see public hospitals for the essential services that they provide, like trauma care. In almost every major city in the United States, the public hospital is the trauma care center, as it is at Grady. So we all recognize that that's a valuable service, and we all know that if we're hurt in an accident, we'd like to be taken to Grady. But I think we forget what else goes on in those hospitals, how important those hospitals are for other essential services, and particularly to poor people. They are the safety net hospitals for poor people. But we also forget that inside those hospitals is incredible medicine being performed there at all sorts of levels. Grady, for instance, has one of the best neuroscience centers in the metro Atlanta area. If you are suffering from a stroke or you have a loved one suffering from a stroke, you want to get them to Grady because they have a wonderful program. They have a great cancer program. They've done a wonderful job over the last 20 years at reducing the disparity between poor and affluent patients, black and white patients, in the detection and treatment of breast cancer, for instance. So I think there's a lot of wonderful things going on at Grady that people just don't know about. They still have this perception that because it's a poor people's hospital, there's probably not a high quality of care going on there. And that's simply false. It's a great hospital in a lot of ways.
How does this become complicated then, as over the decades our mental health facilities have sort of deteriorated?
Well, mental health care in this country is probably our worst public health policy failure. At every level, not just
now, why do you call it a policy failure?
Because I don't think we've ever really made a commitment to figuring out how to treat poor people with chronic mental illness. We used to put them in warehouse state facilities. We deinstitutionalized those facilities in the 60s and 70s. We turned that, what was supposed to be moving them out of institutional care into community care, into a way of saving money instead of actually doing what we should have done. So we put these patients in the community without the support network necessary to be able to keep them well. And so the result is, I think you see a lot of these folks on the streets these days in the homeless population, and you certainly do that. You certainly see that here in Atlanta, and I think that's true in every big city in the country.
And one of the things you talk about is that that's basically just shifting the cost, because that ends up being a problem for law enforcement. It ends up being a problem for social services. It doesn't save us any money.
Correct. You move the cost from state hospital care down to making Grady absorb the cost for the emergency treatment of patients who are acting out and need immediate help. Are you warehouse them in the prisons or in the county jails? There's one estimate that about 40-45% of every inmate in a county jail in the United States of America is mentally ill.
And putting somebody in jail or in prison is incredibly expensive, even more expensive than a hospital stay.
Yeah. In fact, there's a chapter in the book about one of the programs that seems to really work is a concerted effort by a team of psychiatric social workers, psychiatrists, addiction specialists, and others to work with patients very individually. It's a very, I guess I would call it very concentrated effort on a team's part to work with patients. And if you can be with them two or three times a week to make sure they're taking their meds, make sure their housing situation is okay, they're going to be able to stay much more stable. Without that, they run the risk of recycling through either the jail system or Grady Hospital Psychiatric Ward.
So how precarious is Grady's situation at this point?
Grady's in much better shape than it was in 2007 and 2008 when it was on the brink of insolvency. Yeah. The new governance model that they created in 2007 and 2008 is working very well. They're much more financially stable than they were, but they're still very heavily dependent on foundation and philanthropic support to be able to expand their facility. Almost all of the capital expenditures at Grady over the last 8 years have come by virtue of the Marcus Foundation, Woodruff Foundation. Pete Carell and his wife have donated a lot of money there, the Avon Foundation. So the actual support it gets from Fulton and DeKalb County as a percentage of its overall budget, declined significantly over the last 20
years. Which is a huge departure from its founding.
Correct.
So at this point, you were talking about the fact that turning down the Medicaid expansion is costing the state $9 million a day?
$9 million a day.
Would that be the gap for Grady?
It would certainly make a huge difference.
Would it solve the funding?
I don't think so completely. I think Fulton and DeKalb, like every other major governmental entity around urban areas, will still have to put up a portion of that funding. Medicaid would help considerably. The thing that would help the best, actually, is a universal health system of some kind enacted by the United States. We have yet to get there. We've taken a step in that direction with the ACA in 2010. But if everybody who came through those hospital doors had some form of insurance, then the hospital, of course, would be much more financially stable.
And in the minute that we have left, the argument you're making is that the change in funding of our hospitals actually indicates a change in our attitude toward care of our citizens.
I think that's true. And when we go through these tumultuous reform efforts like we did in 2010, 2012, we seem to think that we've solved these issues, but we're a long way from solving these issues.
Mike King is a journalist and author of the new book, A Spirit of Charity, Restoring the Bond Between America and Its Public Hospitals. Mike, interesting. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.